Hello and welcome to Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch, in which two nerds sit on a couch and discuss science fiction and fantasy.
There really should be a CSI paranormal. It would be just like X-Files, only with that guy with the sunglasses. And he would solve the case and he'd be like, yeah, and put his sunglasses on after he found Bigfoot.
Wow, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, well, it would probably be no worse than that latest Conjuring movie.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen, like, you know, I mean, can you imagine if they stopped Amityville Horror at some point and was like, well, you know, we're not gonna like give you police cooperation until you help us, you know, we'll give you the police file once you help us with our case. And it's like, what is this horse trading garbage?
Yeah.
Like, how is this a plot?
So, we are here today to bury Caesar and also to complain about the third Conjuring movie, which is called, stupidly, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
I hated it at The Devil Made Me Do It. Like, I was going into this kind of, you know, with a jaundiced view of whatever. I didn't even know until after that it wasn't even directed by James Wan, that it was like...
Right.
Somebody else, and that,
yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it had the same actors, but it definitely had a different feel.
Yeah, so, like, I think we'll just sort of, like, go through this a little bit. So, like, I'm a pretty huge fan of The Conjuring, and to a lesser extent to The Conjuring 2.
I like all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen
all
of The Conjuring movies. Although, I figured out recently that The Curse of La Llorona is a Conjuring movie, and I don't think we made it through.
But there are two versions of that movie, one of which is stupid, is what I heard.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so we may need to do some research and make sure we get the right version.
Okay, well, so all I'm saying is that the one Conjuring movie that we wandered off from, that director... is the director of the third Conjuring movie.
Oh,
so I'm kind of wondering if there isn't just whatever, not to be a dick. But, and okay, so I actually just did some, like, really bad internet research. And James Wan, I think he's got a pretty interesting career because he kind of became a big deal doing the Saw movies. Like, he definitely directed and wrote the first one. And I think he's been involved in as a producer or writer kind of on and off through the next whatever the heck thousands of iterations. And I have not seen a single Saw movie and I have no interest in them because torture porn is not my deal.
Right, and let's be honest with Saw movies, probably they're all the same. And really what you need to do is you need to get the first one out there so that literally any director can just copy that movie again and again and again and again.
Well, anyway, so, but that was his bit, that was like, and it was kind of a creeper though, because like the first Saw movie came out and everybody, it was fine, but then like it just sort of ended up having this kind of big outsize, I mean, it's something like the greatest grossing horror franchise of all time. Like it beat out like.
Bigger than Jason and Halloween?
Bigger than Friday the 13th. I mean, it's just like in whole dollars. So not adjusted dollars, blah, blah, blah. But it's still, I mean, that's still just kind of a lot of money.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then I thought he was kind of in the weeds for a while. And then he kind of got his feet under him with Insidious, which is very similar to The Conjuring in a way. I kind of don't remember it that well because I kind of watched that and a bunch of other like house haunting movies at the same time, so they all like blur together a little bit. But that one definitely has the same sort of Conjuring situation where you have like a family is thrown into crisis because of, you know, supernatural fuckery, and all of the action takes place within the home, and all of the sort of dynamics are family dynamics, right? I mean, that's the case with both the first two Conjuring movies,
right?
Which is kind of where I think that the third Conjuring movie goes astray.
Yeah, well, and part of that I think is because they almost immediately throw one of the people in jail, and then it's like this separate, like the family isn't even together for most of it, so it's like all of the horror is happening somewhere else in some prison somewhere, and that's like not scary. All you have to do is not be in prison or that guy, and it's fine. You know, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't feel that sense of immediacy with the horror in the other ones. I think that that sort of like immediacy of horror is what drives, for me, is what drives the fright level of those. And I think that when you're talking about like the possession of a person, you know, because we also just watched like Poltergeist, and that involves a little girl being wholly like what did they call it?
Bodily.
Bilocated. Like bilocated into, you know, some sort
Some
of,
spirit
you
realm.
know, etheric whatever. But also like the paranormal activities, which often center on a person, and you know, and the was it
The
Amityville
Exorcist.
Horror, The Exorcist, well, like these are all things that are centered on a person, and a lot of those become analogs for and like as a parent of teenagers, it's like you have these adolescents that's, you know, adolescence is one of those things where it's like, are you possessed? You know, I mean, it's like, so it takes that thing that seems ordinary and it makes it horrific. You know, like you can't look in a mirror anymore because it's scary. It's just scary, you know? Or what they do with like in Poltergeist with the dolls and the toys, they make them scary. And it's like, that's freaky. Or Annabelle, which is a toy. It's a child's toy. Those are scary. And it's because it takes something that's familiar and makes it alien.
Definitely the way like turning the familiar terrifying and the fact
Like
that
featuring
like
a house.
it well that you know it's that the gothic sensibility that the rot comes from within the family and the sort of like breaking down of the dynastic system.
Right, because the house is a symptom of that rot when the house falls
I
apart.
mean it's like I mean I don't want to go too far down this road, but there's something kind of Freudian about it where you have the the house is like you have the layers of the house
More
that
Jungian, isn't it?
well why
It's
not though
archetypal.
yeah but I mean but in the sense that like you have attics and basements, you have these sort of
Oh, I see,
like
yeah.
you like so much of Freud's stuff was like about I actually went to his house when I was in London.
Did that give you any insight?
Yeah, a little bit actually, because he was kind of obsessed with oh, I don't know that I can do that word right now. Funereal objects, right? Where his sort of insight was that when you take something and you put it in a box and you bury it, you protect it and you save it. And so on a psychological level, when you take trauma and you put it in a box and you submerge it, you don't ever get rid of it then. Like it's perfectly
Oh,
preserved.
yeah,
And like
and it's rotting from
and
the
it's and
inside
it's
out.
rotting from the inside. And
Yeah.
that was like so his desk was filled with like Canopic jars and stuff because he was like
How is he not completely cursed? I've seen all the mummy movies, and I'm pretty sure that taking Canopic jars
Yeah,
dooms
no.
you.
I mean he probably was.
Maybe it was because he didn't have the right Canopic jars. It was like the Canopic jars of some secretary somewhere.
Well, by all accounts, he died, I mean, yeah, he got cancer and died, but he was like 80 something, so it wasn't
Yeah,
like it
it
was a
just
big
took longer for the
surprise.
curse to get him.
But anyway, but yeah, but I'm very susceptible to that sort of homebound scary stuff. I think I mean, I think that kind of horror really kind of gets to a lot, I mean, 'cause we all grow up somewhere, right? Like
Right.
we all grow up with, I mean, not everybody grows up with parents, I guess, but like most people do.
Right.
And like and all of those kind of familiar spaces, I don't know. I think it's just kind of a perfect environment. And so
Yeah.
when you get to The Conjuring 3 where it's like dudes in prison, that's not, I can't relate,
Right,
sorry.
right.
Like I can't relate with the priest with the illicit daughter. I can't.
Right.
It's just not a
Well, and a
thing.
lot of them are about the children too, where it's like it's the children who are the ones who are being possessed. Except for in the I think at least the first paranormal, it was the wife. You don't often see the parents going off the rockers like that as much, but it happens. Like in was it Haunting at Hill House? Where no,
Yeah, no, the mother goes
what's the one
no.
with like what's her face? Joe Lies When It Cries.
Yeah, that's the
Amityville
fir-
Horror
No,
wasn't.
she's in the first Conjuring movie. She's the one
Oh yeah,
that
that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, and so like when it is the parents, then it's like, you know, I think, more creepy for kids, but when it's the kids, it's more creepy for parents because it's like weird. Like the Coraline movies is, I mean, it this actually is, it fits exactly into what we're talking about. House-based.
Right.
It's got like the when you go through, it's like the parents
Well,
are
it's
the
fall,
focus
like
of
it's
the
literally
horror.
called the other mother. It's like the mother you don't like and doesn't like you, which is scary.
The other. And I think that sort of like typifies the, well, I mean, it's a cartoon, so it can take it a lot further, but it turns the house itself into this like horror machine, kind of the way they did in Poltergeist, where
Yeah.
you've got this closet that becomes a focal point of the or the entrance into
Or the
that other world.
television. It's like closet in the television where you have like the Freudian like storage space, and then you also have this sort of like the television as like the portal to like the rotting society, you know?
Well, and it's just sort of funny seeing the television like with the snow and
Yeah.
the national anthem, where it's like they don't, I mean, that was when I was a kid, and that was a long ass time ago. Like, TVs don't have snow anymore. They just go black.
Yeah, or blue screen of death. Yeah, I mean, definitely you pointed it out when we watched Poltergeist this time that the opening music is the national anthem that they play?
Yeah, I think so.
Or is it not America Really Beautiful?
No,
It's
it's
like
not. Yeah, it's
it's the
National
anthem.
Anthem.
And like, you know,
Stars and Stripes
I'm
Forever.
old enough barely that I remember when, you know, televisions used to go off the air and then there would be that image of the flag waving and they would play the national anthem. And that's how they start Poltergeist, which is, you know, for, you know, 1982 audiences, they would know immediately what that meant.
And I remember staring into the snow, and it is a hypnotic experience because it's white noise for the eyes. You get close enough to a television, and you can see like kind of maybe not shapes and patterns and whatever, but I mean, I guess it depends on what you're on. But like it definitely it you feel like it moves because it's just like a white noise machine for your eyes, and you're sort of projecting onto it whatever you want because it's completely random. And to have that be the focal point of that movie is freaky for people who, like back then, were
Yeah.
they knew what it was.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely, I mean,
Because I
yeah.
remember a period of time where I would go turn off the TV if it was snow, and I would like not look at it and turn it off. But I mean, what's the equivalent now? I mean, I guess we have sort of, we have like something like The Ring, where something can crawl out of your TV.
I think The Ring is so good. Anyway, but yeah. Oh, so I guess I'm just gonna sort of go through the movie a little bit, kind of not scene by scene, but just from what I remember in sequential order,
Of
right?
The Conjuring,
Conjuring
The
movie.
Devil Made Me Do It.
The Devil May. Yeah, see, it's just such a bad. I mean, it's just unfortunate. Anyway, so, you know, it opens with a kind of standard exorcism scene, right? And like having just seen The Exorcist, like it literally uses that stuff from The Exorcist where he's like, come into me instead of into the child.
Right. I mean, that
Like
was kind of
they use
the
it.
pattern it was following.
Yeah, I
A
mean,
lot of them followed that pattern too. I mean, I don't know that it's coming from anything. It's not like there's an actual exorcism, like, thing in the church. They don't really do that, you know?
no. But no, so I actually think that The Exorcist is actually 100% the template here. I mean,
It's like the
they.
George Romero Night of the Living Dead for the rest of them.
Yeah, no, that's
Even the
totally.
Constantine movies like nod to that stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's totally accurate. Because I mean, because even in The Exorcist, they were like, yeah, we don't actually do this. This is not a thing. But then it kind of creates a life of its own and off it goes.
Yeah, I would love to see an episode of Lucifer where they do shit like that. That would be amazing.
That would actually be amazing. Well, I mean, the most recent season's out. We can start watching it. Anyway, so it's a really standard exorcism scene. There's a little kid who's possessed. The older brother takes it, or it's not the older brother, it's the
I thought it was.
sister's boyfriend.
Oh, well, he's awfully nice to that kid for just being a boyfriend.
Yeah, like
It was a very familial
wow, that
relationship.
seems a little.
Like, seemed like a younger brother to me, but
Yeah,
whatever.
but no. Anyway, so but then kind of the next scene and there's some blah blah with it. And then the kind of the next scene that impressed upon me was them moving into the house,
Right,
right?
into the dog kennel house. Because they were living with the, I mean, that was all one big house with the dog kennels, and the landlord, who is the owner of the dog kennels, who also is their employer, That seemed like a really weird deal. Like, they were probably getting either free or cheap rent.
But that was their apartment. Like, the kid was living in a different house, though.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what I'm saying, is, like, I'm talking about the kid and the family moving into their house. I'm talking about the waterbed scene.
Oh, yeah, when they first moved into the house, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I feel like for people, like, our age-ish, like, you know, so...
Well, but, I mean, what impressed on me, though, before you even get to that scene... is the one where they're like, well, he's in jail now. I mean, didn't that all that happened first? And this is like, well, let's start at the beginning. What happened first? Mm. And then it went back. That was the first scene, was them moving in, because it's like, we start in this paranormal procedural where they have to, like, they have to do some, like, you know, gumshoe detective work to figure out, like, why isn't this acting like a normal possession?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah.
And then it's like, kid walks into the room. Sort of like gesturing
to the shenanigans, because it's like, so, the kid ends up killing, you know, the kid who says, take the demon, go into me, kills his landlord, thinking it's a demon. Then the Warrens get involved, and, I mean, and I guess the through line for the Warrens, who are actually, I think, are just, like, the greatest married couple in television of all time.
Yeah. Like, particularly just... because he's married to her despite her choice in dresses.
Oh, her outfits are so great. Yeah. Like, she's just made out of ascots and big collars.
Holly Hobby ruffles.
And, like, her huge hair, and I don't know, everything about it is amazing. And the two of them are just, like, totally hot for each other in a way that's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, legitimately, like, their relationship is why you should even bother with this movie.
Yeah.
It's because they're, like, kind of fun.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't work. Anyway, so after the kid kills some people and who, like, this is the problem, is I don't even care about that plot. I don't care. And so I'm just sort of talking about the things that I liked in this movie, which are, like, you know, kid comes in, you know, the house is really empty, except, you know, he comes into a bedroom. There's a big stripped waterbed. It doesn't have sheets on it. There's nothing in the room but the waterbed, right? And so the kid, who's probably 9, 10, right? Goes in there and starts jumping on it, which, momishly, I was like, dude, you're going to pop that thing.
Yeah.
But then it also sort of made me think of all, like, waterbeds I've known and not loved.
Yeah.
like, when was the last time you saw a waterbed?
No, I mean, it had to be in the 80s for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Like, why would you have them now? Especially because, you know, all that water in there is toxic sludge water that will kill you if it pops, because I'm sure it's filled with all kinds of Ebola disease after sitting in a plastic bag for years. And then heated. They heated them, because otherwise water beds would be super cold. And so, like, you'd heat them up and you just have this, like, this Petri dish that's the size of a hot tub that you then sleep on.
Yeah, it's so gross. Yeah. I mean... My like, best friend when I was, like, 4, her dad had one. And we used to just, like, go in there and, like, wrestle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm so surprised we didn't pop it, because we would just go in there and, like, go at each other. And, like, just make a huge mess. But we did never pop it.
Yeah, they're not all that comfortable to sleep on.
No, they're terrible.
I don't understand, like, I mean, it's one of those, like, in theory, this should be a good idea.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know what, in theory, so should sleeping on an air mattress, and yet nobody does that by choice.
Right, because it sucks. Anyway, so I guess, I mean, so the waterbed scene, so he comes in, he's jumping on the waterbed, and I actually thought it was legitimately creepy when a sort of face, like, you know, pushes against the skin of the waterbed, and he's like, whoa!
Right.
You know, and then he, you know, he's sort of kind of pushing around, and more happens, and then eventually, like an arm just, like, punches out of the whole thing and tries to get him.
Which is the embodiment of the Ebola that's festering inside of that waterbed.
The black mold. And so that whole scene, like, I really enjoyed, because it sort of made me think, like, it made me, I don't, what is there a word for nostalgia about things that you didn't actually like?
Yeah.
I mean, I never liked them, but it was like,
I thought the parents' reaction was really unrealistic, because I would have walked in there and been like, why were you jumping on the waterbed? Now it's popped and we have to get rid of it somehow.
Yeah.
But although, they were like, oh my God, are you okay? Oh, were you haunted?
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's also one of those things, is like, at this point, demographically speaking, I'm old. Like,
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, kids have any idea what any of that stuff is.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would be like some weird retro thing, like a
Yeah,
cassette
it
tape
just
or,
doesn't.
you know, horse-drawn carts,
Yeah, it
which
just.
all came from the same era.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, because I was born in the
Yeah, Mom,
1900s.
were you born in the 1900s or the 1800s?
Anyway, and I'm trying to remember now what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Warrens got called after the other guy. Like, they couldn't have had an exorcism, right? Or did they? Were they part of that? I don't even remember.
They were part of the original exorcism, and then
They
they,
were like,
like,
"This house is clean now," and then whatever.
yeah, or they were like, the boy is clean, because it was not an exorcism of the house, it was an exorcism of the
Right,
child.
because otherwise it would be a haunting. Which, I mean, and that was one of the things in Poltergeist. Turns out it should have been called Haunting, because by the end we realized that it actually wasn't a poltergeist, it
It was
was a
a
haunting.
haunting, yeah. I like so we just watched Poltergeist again, and I was actually legitimately impressed with it.
I'm surprised at how well it held up. I mean, all of the people were, I mean, the acting was really good. I mean, the story was actually pretty interesting. I mean, I think by the end, when the coffins start popping out of the ground, and the guy takes the developer and shakes him and is like, "You moved the headstones, but you left the bodies." I feel like
Right.
something happened between the 80s and today where I just kind of don't care as much. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I could see why you would do that. It'd just be easier. Bulldoze them all into a landfill and set it on fire. I mean, whatever.
Terrible.
But in the 80s, that it must have been a really big deal, because that was the kind of emotional climax of that movie.
I just think that that's just like a that's like a whole metaphor for like white flight and the suburbanization of America. Like I completely see the bodies stacked
Yeah.
that led to that, you know,
Oh, totally.
the freeways cutting through black urban environments and destroying them,
Yeah,
and
right.
the, you know, I mean, I can
I
absolutely see,
doubt Spielberg was thinking that when he made the movie,
doesn't matter,
but that's what it's about.
does not doesn't matter. I
Because, I mean,
don't
there's a whole
believe
scene
in
of them, like,
authorial
they're walking
intent.
up on this beautiful hill. I mean, it's Cuesta Verde, right? Green hills.
Yeah.
And, like, he's talking about phase five, which isn't when they put houses on top of all of those hills. And this is the real horror show of that movie, which is that, like all developments, you know, you have these developments where they'll build just downhill, and they'll say, "Look at this beautiful view you get." You know, and then they'll build houses or taller buildings right in front of them, blocking the view. And you've already paid for that penthouse, but it's now kind of functionally worthless because you don't have the view that you had. And then that's it. You know.
They're doing this over in Bluestone. You
Yeah,
can
no, I
see it
know.
happening.
And
It's
it's
actually
and
hilarious to
it and
me.
it's like, yep, that's what they're doing. They're building all of these houses on those green hills, and it should be called like suburban house hills now. What's the Spanish word for suburban house hills? Because that's where you live.
And also, like, I've never lived in California, so it was actually like when he's like, look at this development that you've sold, and like it's all just like what it looked like to me was garage pads. Like, they don't have basements. There's
Yeah.
not, I mean, there's like a 6-inch piece of concrete that they're gonna build those houses on. They are trash.
Yeah.
These are garbage houses.
And there's coffins underneath them anyway.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. Anyway, but yeah, I was actually legitimately impressed with it, especially the opening parts, because like, you know, like the parents like getting high and being stupid
I mean, they had a
and
great relationship in that movie.
yeah,
Like
they
the I mean,
really
that
did.
was a loving family.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's actually why it works so well, is that like it's not I mean, yeah, the dysfunction, maybe. It's not coming from within the family,
But
though.
the thing I didn't even realize the first time I watched that was that older daughter Dana is only I mean, it's like she's less than 15 years younger than the mother. Because, as it turns out, she's a stepdaughter from the father's first marriage, but that's never talked about in
Where
the
do they
movie.
explain that?
They don't. It's just part of, like, I mean, I was reading it online, and they were like, "Yeah, this is why it works, is because it's a second. She's the second wife. Those two other
Interesting.
kids are her kids."
Right.
And that's why, like, Dana disappears and goes lives with friends at some point, and it's like it's just a sort of gesture to a real life family that. I think in movies, when they're portraying characters, it's a lot easier to focus on the flaws of the characters to create realistic, like, characterization, sure. to make them more three-dimensional. And I think that, like, with Poltergeist, it manages to, like gloss over all of the flaws and make them three-dimensional. Like, I thought that was actually pretty cool, because mm-hmm. it's like, their flaws are that they're just sort of human and that they love each other, and that's what drives their motivations. It's not that, like, you know, I am a character who has this particular, like, character flaw.
Dramatic
and
flaw.
That's what I have to overcome during this movie. Like, sure. That's not what the movie was about, you know?
Sure. Yeah, and because like, in text, they say the mother is 32 and the oldest daughter is 16.
Yeah, right.
So there's, you know, I mean, she's, it's like the Gilmore Girls, right?
Right.
It's like literally what the Gilmore Girls was. Anyway, so, but, like, there's all these, like, kind of sly jokes to her, kind of sexual activity, because she, like, they're like, yeah, we're gonna go stay at the hotel, blah, 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 and she's like, oh, yeah, I know that one. And the mom is like, what? And then something interrupts him so that it doesn't get discussed, mm-hmm. but it's clear that she's like, oh, yeah, I've totally banged it out there.
Right.
And then, like, when she comes back at the very end when they're, like, escaping, like, she has this huge hickey on her neck.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, I had. Hmm. I don't know. I just thought it was really funny that, like, she's off doing all this stuff. Anyway, so, but that was this. And I guess that was another thing that I wanted to sort of complain about with home-based horror movies, is that I think one of the things that is so effective about Poltergeist is that it takes place in suburban America in a recognizably suburban home.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you were even kind of freaking out a little bit that this is like the houses I grew up in.
Well, for a particular era, yeah. But, I mean, it's, yeah. That's that sort of the suburban development house. You know, they all look more or less the same.
Right. Open floor
from
plan,
that era,
big,
you know.
Big staircase. Yeah,
built during the 80s, they have a certain look.
Right. They have a certain look to them. They have a certain
more on the outside than the inside, but...
Yeah, but even the inside is just, like, the inside is pretty, like, there's not a lot of, like, you know, it's just, like, beige carpeting and white walls, and, I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, I mean, I did think that a lot of the details, like, the kids' room has all of the Star Wars shit all over it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, there's, like, a C-3PO, like, light switch cover, and just everything.
Well, and he covers the creepy clown with a Wookiee jacket.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, I think that that's actually one of the failures of horror films, is when they go for those, like, Victoriana houses. Like, that house looks like it's haunted because it's a Queen Anne.
Right, trying to get that Edward Scissorhands house look, you
right,
know. Like,
right, right.
I mean, haunting at Hill House, that's one of those kind of perfect, or like Crimson Peak, right, where it's like,
yeah.
these big, old, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's... like those are more scary in your imagination.
But I mean, like, for example, I remember thinking this when I watched the most recent It, the first one,
mm-hmm.
which is actually really, speaking of Spielberg, right? It's very Spielbergian in the way it kind of sort of constructs the 80s, and the kids' relationship is very Spielbergian.
Mm-hmm.
But when they go to the haunted house that's on the block, like, they're in a suburban tract, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all of these 70s ramblers, and then the haunted house on the corner is a fucking Queen Anne. Or, like,
yeah.
Or some sort of vernacular building.
Right.
And I was like, what? Like, come on, you guys. Like, make that a 70s building. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, make it something that somebody's grown up in.
Yeah, but the 70s just isn't scary.
Really? I think the 70s is fucking horrifying.
No, it's just eye-rolling.
I guess.
It's a little too familiar, you know?
Really? I don't know. Anyway, but so this one didn't even have a house, though. I mean, other than the scene that takes place in the, with the waterbed, I don't really feel like we spent much time in, like a house environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, I mean, really quickly after... The older brother's like, you know, take me instead, whatever, and then kills the landlord/employer,
mm-hmm.
which I gotta say is really bad life choices right there. Because now you have to move out and you don't have a job anymore. But also you're in jail. So, you know, really bad life choices. So then immediately he's in prison and the you know, I mean, that's it. I mean.
Yeah.
And then the paranormal investigators are called in and their whole goal is to try and get him tried on account of the devil made me do it, like, which is why it's named that. And that's just kind of a bad choice, but whatever, it's fine. And then they go to the police to talk about it. And the police are like, well, you know, you're here to help us on this other case that we've got. Go be a psychic. And she's like, you know, does her little psychic dog and pony show. And then eventually, like, wins the guy over so that she can look at the case. And then they end up, like, doing this, like, psychic investigation thing that was just, like, kind of dumb. I mean, it was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Because, like, she goes under the house and finds the little cursed thing. And then they have to figure out, like, oh, my God, what is this? Really, let's talk to this other guy who knows about cursed things. And he takes them into his satanic basement filled with cursed things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and because he's this ex-priest who spent all this time.
Who is played by John Noble.
Right, who is the steward of Gondor with right, shorter hair.
Right, well, who's also on, not Supernatural, but he's, like, when you cast somebody like that in a role like that, you just know it's all going to go pear-shaped, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just know. He's not there to be benevolent.
Right.
It's going to go bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you're supposed to think it's him.
Yeah.
You know, and it turns out it's not, but, like, you know.
It kind of is.
But they didn't, I mean, they screwed that up, I think, because that's one of those things where, you know, so it ends up where it's, like, his daughter has been probably corrupted by all of the satanic crap he has in his basement and has become a Satanist.
No,
but they go on and the way he describes it is like they just want chaos, like, because they're like, well, why did they target this family? Why that boy? That doesn't make any sense. And he's like, oh, they just want chaos. And I'm like, that's not good enough. That's not good enough motivation, because this is the first Conjuring movie where the antagonist is a living, breathing human being with motivation who can be thrown in prison. You know, yes, she's a witch, but she can still be incarcerated. Uh-huh. And, like, they don't even really explore, like, her motivation at all. They don't talk about, this is a great opportunity to talk about how scary people are. And, like, people with that kind of power could be terrifying, you know? And like, why is she doing this? Like, does it have something to do with the relationship with her father? I mean, there was so much there that just wasn't explored that was just ripe for being an yeah. interesting plot device, and they just didn't even talk about it. It's just like, yeah, this is my daughter. She lives down in the basement here.
Right.
Go find her altar and destroy it.
Right.
And that was the entirety of his character.
No, right. And so, like, just to back up a little bit, like, so they find John Noble, who has done, who was a priest, who did a bunch of, like, nonsense involving some satanic group. And, like, this is definitely, like, it was invoking for me the, because it's set in 1981, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was invoking for me the satanic panic bullshit of the 80s. And the satanic, the satanic panic bullshit of the 80s ruined many people's lives. Because mm-hmm. there aren't actually fucking Satanists. And so,
yeah.
like, I started really turning against this film at that point because I was like, all of this is nonsense, you know, like
right.
all of this is designed to, like, attack people who aren't, like, fitting whatever fucking bullshit norm you have.
Right, right. And all those 80s helicopter parents are like, I knew it!
Right, exactly. So they meet with John Noble, and he's, like, this ex-priest, or maybe current priest, I don't fucking know. But it turns out, like, in the end, it turns out that he had this secret daughter, like, whose mother had died, and he raised her in secret in this creepy old house. And, like, you know, I really don't feel like anybody addressed how unbelievably fucked up that situation was.
I feel like almost there's got to be a whole other movie's worth of deleted scenes that are on the cutting room floor that actually went into the subplot of their relationship.
Right.
Because it's set up so beautifully.
Right.
And then just thuds to the ground like a broken tennis ball.
Because they
kind
of continue to treat him like a sympathetic character.
Despite
the fact that if you have a priest who has impregnated a woman who dies in childbirth and has raised a child in secret, all of
in a
that,
satanic basement.
All of that is an ethical black hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
None of that is okay. You have violated your oath. You have taken advantage of your relationship. I don't even fucking care who she was.
I mean, it's such a great opportunity to explore morality. Like, what is morality? You know, like, is he like, he could be a good person, right? He could be a good person for like all kinds of reasons, and yet based on the actions of what he's done, like, he's a horribly, like, immoral person, and yet, you know, I mean, like, and having that be this juxtaposition of like, that would be really interesting. Like, that's a character flaw right there. This character has been built and then just sort of left to float there, and then it just floats off.
And then it just floats off, because, like, because the other thing is, like, so, yeah, so you have this, like, kind of disaster of a character who nobody pushes back, really, against that. Nobody's like, that's fucked. There's no world in which you should have been allowed to do any of that. But then, you know, so, but that entire environment that this girl has been raised in gives her ample motivation, ample motivation to curse the shit out of normal families.
Yeah. You know well, and I mean? Have an active hand. Like, once she realizes that the Warrens are kind of onto her, she can, like, psychically project herself. And like, there's like, this psychic projection battle where she can, like, inhabit a corpse and haul it at Ed. Like, that was a pretty creepy scene where there's this, like, corpse that sort of...
zombifies.
I mean, it doesn't come to life, even. It's just being animated by, like, a golem, by this witch.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he, like, so Ed breaks you know, his wife's concentration. And then the thing just, like, falls over dead again, you know, because it was always dead. And it's just, it's like, whew, boy, that was actually pretty creepy. You know, like, there were a lot of little set pieces like that that were really creepy. Like, when What's-His-Face is in jail and he's mopping the floor, and it's like, okay, if you are awaiting trial, you are not mopping a floor.
In the middle of the
You don't have a
night.
Prison job.
It's not happening.
Like, but whatever, that's fine. You know, clearly the writers never spent any time in prison. I mean, I haven't either, and I know that. But whatever, fine. They were trying to set up a scene where there's this, like, dark corner, and there's a bucket that rolls under, and then, like, this big, scary, like, demonic version of his landlord pops out of the corner.
Yeah.
And that was, like... You know, it wasn't just a jump scare. I mean, I thought it was, like, pretty... It reminded me of the Crooked Man stuff that they had done.
In the second movie.
Yeah, and that stuff was really creepy.
Or,
I mean, like, they did that was good, but it felt really Stephen King-like. It felt like Christine with the ghost of the guy who sold him that car riding shotgun, you know?
Right. Or, like, I mean, there's all... Like, part of that scene in when he's mopping and then everything goes to shit is that one of the sleeping... I mean, because he's in a like a psychiatric place.
It's not jail. It's
well, yeah,
Bellevue
it's like,
or
it's
whatever.
It's like psycho jail, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
Anyway, but like one of the patients is there and asleep, and like wakes up and is animated by whatever this demonic force is, right? And starts singing Debbie Harry's "Call Me."
Which was playing when he killed the landlord.
Right.
Which that whole scene felt like Stephen King novel. I mean, the way it was written, what was happening, the use of pop songs, like, all of that was like, just somebody
was
homaging,
I mean,
Stephen King really hard here.
Yeah, but it was also just brutally effective, I thought. I mean, it's the kind of thing that raises the hair on your arms. Like, I had no idea that you could make Call Me terrifying.
Yeah.
But it was really, really, I was just like, huh, stop singing, that's awful.
Yeah. Alexa, stop playing
and so,
Call Me.
But yeah, anyway, so, I mean, so it's such an odd movie because it's like that, it's like less than the sum of its parts. Because there are actually legitimately good, scary set pieces in the thing.
Yeah, but I mean, that's almost like you're... Like, you've made a really great movie trailer, and now you need to find all of a bunch of stupid pieces to paste it together with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's the movie about? Oh, it's like a police procedural where, I mean, it's like the Phantom Menacing of horror movies, where it's like, we're going to have a big crawler about C-SPAN that nobody cares about. Like, we're going to do this police case that nobody cares about.
Yeah, no, it just, yeah, it definitely didn't work. And I just, I feel like there's so many lost opportunities. I mean, because again, like, they're like, oh yeah, she just wants, you know, the witch just wants to see the world burn or whatever. But it's like, actually, she has legitimate grievances.
Probably with her father and the community she's in.
100% legitimate grievances, the way she was raised and how and by whom.
But they don't even gesture at it. I mean, except in the most Hemingway-esque way of not saying anything about it at all. You know, I mean, like, we're left here to, like, write this story for them.
Yes.
Like, this is the most fanficable movie because there's, I mean, like... Yeah, she hates... The reason she's cursing this boy is because he's got a normal life.
Yeah.
He's got a waterbed that he can jump on. Like, what did she have? A cold stone basement that has a satanic altar in it.
Yeah, and a father who treats her like a nasty secret to be hidden from the world.
I mean, I'm guessing, because none of that was in the movie.
Right.
Yeah, it was just sad because it's like, and that wasn't even part of the resolution. And then the funniest part about this movie is that it's like, the devil made me do it, right? It's all about this guy who's in prison because he was possessed. He was temporarily cursed into doing this horrific thing. Right. And then there's a scene with the prosecutor where she's like, his defense lawyer, where she's like, well, you prove to me, like, I'll try to do this whole devil make me do it, like, you know, defense, but it's not going to fly. And, you know, prove to me that this stuff is real. And then the next scene, it's like she's in front of the judge being like, Your Honor, this stuff is real. Yeah. And we don't even get to see what they did, which is fine and all. But, like, also that would have been a great opportunity to, like, scare the crap out of us. The ultimate resolution of this movie is in one of those little paragraphs of text after, like, that they like to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, he spent 5 years in jail for killing that guy. It didn't work.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the movie where it's like, the whole movie is not even about him. The title of the movie is about him. Like, there's the story that's driving the plot that is about him. But the movie was not about him at all. It was about this, like, this much more interesting group of people
that we don't learn anything about. Yeah.
Yeah, that was what made this movie so frustrating, because it could have been so much better, and it just wasn't.
It was like, it was almost like that there were two films, and they they couldn't decide which one they were doing.
Yeah.
Because, like, there was one that centered on the possession in the family, and that could have been one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one with the fucked up situation with the priest, you know, grown satanic child.
And then there was a procedural which was about whether or not you can try somebody if they've been haunted. Yes. If they're not insane, not by reason of temporary insanity.
CSI, like, Amityville.
Yeah, it was like, come on.
Yeah, no. Whatever. It was just kind of a bummer, because even that second one, which kind of has some issues, like, there are some just really, really good scares, and it's also just like, I mean, again, because it centers on a family, because it centers on, like, recognizable human relationships with one another, it's still effective.
Right, which is why that kind of movie works, you know? Like, that's the Amityville, that's the Poltergeist. I mean, all of those movies work because it's really about this family falling apart. It has nothing to do with ghosts, you know? That's really what's going on in these movies, is that it's like... Like, why are they almost always associated with moving into new houses, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that's, like, it's stressful. That's a stressful thing to have to do. Like, why are you uprooting your family? It's, like, it's not for good reasons, probably. I mean, like, the whole thing is stressful and scary, and that's really what the movie is about. That's what the horror is derived from.
So, I was thinking about this recently, so... I mean, because I feel like almost the moving in is like a metonymy for other traumas, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was thinking about the first Conjuring movie and the Haunting of Hill House, right? Both of those stories involve women attempting to kill their own children.
Mm-hmm. After moving into a new house.
After moving into the new house. Yeah. And I feel like on some level, both of those women have large families, like larger than is typical.
Right.
Now, anyway, it's four or five children. And it sort of made me think of I mean, there was a case, it was probably in the early 90s, where a woman drowned her children in the bathtub in mm-hmm. Texas. And, you know, and it was a postpartum psychosis situation. And it sort of made, and in both of those narratives, you have women who, like, the trauma of moving into the new house is like the trauma of becoming a new mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have semi-absent husbands,
mm-hmm.
More so in The Conjuring, I believe, than in the other one, because right. he's in the house all the time.
Right, right.
And they, I think, both of them actually do have loving relationships, so I'm not trying to trash the husbands in any way.
Right.
Although
in Amityville, wasn't he like a truck driver?
Yeah, he was a long-haul truck driver, yeah. So he was gone for long periods.
But like Haunting Hill House, he was, you know, rehabbing that house. That was their living. This is how they made money.
Right. So yeah. So that one's not the case. It's more the case in The Conjuring. But I just feel like there's something there about a sort of postpartum psychosis. You know, like mm-hmm. because you know, like the. I mean, culturally speaking, there's a lot of stuff about how the maternal instinct is this huge instinct, and mm-hmm. you know, it's very real, and you know, you turn into a mama bear and all this bullshit, right?
And if it's subverted, then it's even like then equally dangerous then.
Right, yeah. And I think that it's kind of, I mean, I don't think it's really necessarily talked about, but all that stuff like I don't believe there is a maternal instinct. I mean, I think you can.
I mean, I hate my kids, but I'm not going to kill them.
No, but I mean, I just really, I mean, I just think that a lot of that is a bunch of nonsense. And that,
yeah.
and that especially in that initially postpartum period, like you're in a period of kind of dislocation from your own body. Like you've moved into a different body.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's like a huge physical trauma yeah. to start with, you know?
Yeah, no. And because I remember I didn't have baby blues with the first kid, but I definitely did with the second.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just being, like, I remember lying down on the bed after I, you know, like, changed the child's pants and lying down on the bed because I was just like, oh my God, I don't know that I can do anything ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the rational part of my brain was like, what you're experiencing right now is some sort of fucked up. I was able to tell myself that I was like, that what I was experiencing wasn't real.
Right.
It didn't make it go away.
Right.
It just made it possible for me to get up off the bed and go on.
Right.
And so I just feel like there's something about these sorts of narratives where you have like women, lots of children trapped in the home,
mm-hmm.
trying to kill their children.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the sort of like scary, reality of living with all of that need.
Right. Right.
And then the inability to cope,
yep. you know,
I mean, yeah. not to get too serious, too late.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously that was something I saw in the first movie. And
well, and I feel like, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I feel like the first season of American Horror Story dealt with a lot of these same
yes.
things.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, and in the same ways where it's like, you know, because a lot of it, speaking of attics and basements, you know, I mean,
yeah.
like, because the paranormal movies were all about the attic, but the American Horror Story, the first season, was all about the basement. I mean,
yeah.
that was like, all of that stuff was super creepy. And also the Amityville house was all about the basement, too.
Yeah.
But that also, I mean, there was also like the attic piece of it. I mean,
yeah, no,
it's kind of the whole basement. House, the whole
yeah.
house.
No, it's the, yeah.
You know, whereas in Poltergeist, it was so specific that it was like, this is centered in the kitchen. If you sit on this spot that we've drawn a circle, you'll slide over here. And it's like, what kind of like gerbil wheel ghosts are these?
Yeah.
You know, like that's just weird. And then like this is after they beautifully stacked up the chairs, like, you know, balanced them on the table and
yeah.
and did all kinds of other really interesting things, and it's like now they're just gonna slide
like
people across the floor.
I feel like the Sixth Sense echoed that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where the mother's like, what did you just do this? And yeah. the kid's like, no, and then turn away, turn back, and then everything's different.
Yep.
Like the Sixth Sense totally did that. Because yeah. it's super effective because it's incredibly creepy.
It is. It really is. I mean, and I think Poltergeist did a good job of the, like, the physical stuff that happened that was creepy. Like, the steak crawling across the counter, you know, the,
although, like, why did he rip his face off? Like, why even do that? Like, if I have a scar on my face, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm going to just rip my face off.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but I mean,
it was creepy. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
This is fine.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the whole idea of, like, some paranormal researchers showing up and doing stuff, like, that, I mean, that's what Poltergeist was. Like, you have these paranormal researchers showing up and doing stuff, and, like, that's kind of what this latest Conjuring movie was, I think, gesturing at, was, like, you know, but we're actual paranormal researchers, and, like, legitimately, if you're going to write a story like that, these would be the people to write it about, but, like, it's like they were trying to make too many movies at once and ended up not making any of them.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, I just really, really believe that if, like these movies so far have been the gothic family horror mm-hmm. centered on a location, centered on a person, and this is semi-centered on a person, but it actually goes off in so many different directions where we're looking at other people the witch has killed, we're looking at the witch's backstory, we're looking at this other person's backstory. Yeah, because
it turns out that was the solution to it, was, like, this witch had, like, whoever had gone to college in this other city, they were trying to connect the cases, and it's like, she went to college in this city, and that's when the witch cursed her, and it's just like, okay, so they're connected, I guess, but I mean, like...
But, like, who gives a shit?
Nobody cares at that point. You're not getting the guy out of jail on this information, because it doesn't really, legally, it doesn't matter, because there is no legal paranormal...
Right, no.
Anyway, so, like, whatever. It doesn't, like, none of it matters, and that's fine.
And
it really, like, what they should have... I understand why they did it, right? Because it's like, with every new movie, you're trying to come up with a new angle, make it bigger and better, you know, whatever it is, you have to get audiences to come in, and, like, they've already seen the last movie, but, like, realistically, I wouldn't mind if you made the last movie only newer, or whatever. I mean, like, just do it again. This is why we were watching you in the first place.
Which is honestly why I feel like the second one works. I wasn't as into it as the first one,
mm-hmm.
but it's definitely solid.
Yeah.
Like that, because it definitely focuses on, like, and it also has a bunch of actors I really love.
Yeah.
Like the woman who plays the mom, I can't remember her name right now, but, like, she's really, really wonderful. Anyway, like, but yeah, I mean, just, like, there's a whole family dynamic that they sketch really well mm-hmm. in, like, an incredibly compact but legible relationships mm-hmm. between the family members. And, like, and part of that is done through the staging of the house.
Yeah.
You know, this house looks like this because these people live here. This is what they're like with each other.
Right.
You can see it written everywhere they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, and it's great.
Yeah, well, and I mean, as Americans, our houses define us, and so when you move into a new house, you are, in a sense, being redefined by that house, which happens in these horror movies again and again. Like, these mothers take on the persona of the ghost in the house, and they, you know, they become it, because that's, I mean, we define ourselves by our possessions, and our house is the biggest possession, you know, and that I think is why it's so traumatic to move into a new house. You're redefining yourself, you know?
Yeah. I just recently watched Night of the Living Dead, which is not related to any of these in any way, but it definitely had the whole house situation going on.
Yeah.
You know, the way they navigate the space and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm incredibly susceptible to anything involving, like, a structure like that. Like, I think that's, you know, like, my dreamscape, like, when I dream in the houses I've lived in.
Yeah.
Like, my brain will, like, reset them so that they look like other things, but mm-hmm. it's the same house. Like, that's where I live.
Yeah.
even in dream, mm-hmm. that's where I live. Anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
High five.
High five. Thank you.